Off the Ball, GAA.
No, and I see them lads behind me there, Christy Ring there with the head bandages. We need a few more of them for the guys in these Malies. Look, the Malies, was it a Malie? No, it was a bit of pushing and shoving. It's just that nobody wants to kind of back down at that stage.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Hi, we're back. Hope you can hear me now. If you can hear me now, let's catch up here what we missed so far. Keith, in 1988, was the 22nd most popular name in Ireland. There was 300 odd of them born, and the name has decreased in popularity in the 21st century. That was the start of the show. Then we went through the running order, and then we went through the two managers that have been sacked in the last 24 hours since we've been on the show last, which was Thomas Frank and Sean Dyche. Now, we'll get back to the two managers leaving. But I just want to touch on the Sunderland-Liverpool game because there's a good chance that we're going to go missing in this analysis considering everything that's happening at the moment.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts on it?
Look, Liverpool got the win. I think Sunderland's first home this defeat of the season, which is a good cue for Liverpool. Liverpool fans keep saying to me that Florian Wirtz is getting better. On the ball, he is getting better. He hit the post last night. He's a good manipulator of the ball. He will pick up space. But when you play in that number 10, the amount of times you're going to have a fighting ball or you're going to have a little bit of a physical battle with somebody and you're going to have to be brave, I don't see it with Florian Wirtz. And people are probably thinking, you're being a little bit harsh, Keith. The 38th minute of the game last night, Mohamed Salah goes down the right wing, he crosses it, Dan Bollard heads it straight up into the air and Robin Roos comes off his line about to, looks like he's going to come out and catch it. Florian Wirtz is under it. Have a look at the header. Have a look at the header from Florian Wirtz. He sort of throws his head in, but he's like, I hope the goalkeeper doesn't hit me here. Absolutely. I know what Sean Dyche would have been roaring from the sideline if you throw a head in like that. And he sort of half-heartedly heads it, and it's straight at Roofs. He just catches it, and you're thinking, bit of conviction there. You scored a goal. He's weak. He's not brave. He's very good at football. Very, very good at football, but I don't think he has the desire. I don't think he has the physicality. 130 million, yeah, talented player. But I'd like to see him get his nose bloodied. I'd like to see him get a cut on the side of his face just to think, I'll go through the hard times. I don't see Florian, like, the amount that he's never going to get the ball in acres of space every single game. People are going to be around him. So he's going to have to learn to ride tackles, not always take the easy option out. And for anybody who's thinking you're being a little bit harsh, have a look at the 38th minute of that game. Go and have a look at the header that I'm talking about. It's really poor from him.
But otherwise, he was quite good.
On the ball. Yeah, on the ball. But don't, like, when you go back and have a look at Florian Wirtz, don't just have a look at him when he has the ball. Have a look at when the ball is coming into him or when it's a 50-50 ball or a 60-40 ball or something that you're thinking, there's a bit of physicality needed here. Judge him on that because he's been awful. He just falls over and thinks, I'll try and win a foul here. Never, ever does he come out on top of a physical battle. Plays in the number 10. He's going to get bumped and kicked and he's going to have to learn to ride tackles and be a little bit stronger. Oh, yeah. Great on the ball. But from what I see with the physicality, it's really starting to get to me. And again, you think I'm being a little bit harsh? Have a look at that 38 minute. The way he heads that ball is like, it's like a scared boy.
But you could develop that, right?
I don't know. I don't know.
When you say physicality, you mean mentality.
Yeah, mentality to want to get involved in a physical battle. He doesn't like, he wants to. And when that ball is coming, I've been in that situation when you can see a goalkeeper out of the corner of your eye and you can see the ball and you think, I'm going to take a clattering here. It's a split second decision whether you're brave enough to think, I want to score, I don't care if I get my head punched. Florian Wirtz did care if he got his head punched last night and he half-heartedly, I'll do it, but I really don't want to do it. He'd done the bare minimum to get his head onto that ball. Had he been braver, he'd have scored a goal.
It's funny, I was coming in going to be hot in Wirtz this morning. You know, I had a few notes. I was like, is he going to be a prominent Liverpool player now? Is he getting going finally?
He kind of is. Like, on the ball, he's brilliant.
So around that 38 minute mark, like, he has a shot that was saved by the keeper. He hits the post as well. And there are just two opportunities he has, but he's getting in the hole. He's causing problems. Particularly for one that hits the post, is like that touch from his right foot to get onto his left.
Yeah.
There's a lot to work with. I mean, that side, the physicality and the mentality side of his game, you could develop that. Technical aspect is more difficult to improve on, and he has that.
Yeah,
there's a lot to work with here with Florian Wirtz.
You can get him into the gym, you can bulk him up, but that bravery, I don't think you can learn bravery. I think you either have it or you don't. And like when it's I might get a whack here, but I'm still going to put my head in. I don't think Florian Wirtz does. I think he pulls out of it. I think he's saying, not for me. Even Gary Neville did it the other day. Was it Marmoush? There was a 50-50 ball between the goalkeeper and Marmoush. Could have darted in front of the goalkeeper, but he didn't. He pulled out. And Gary Neville actually said on commentary in Sky, "I'd love to say what I'm thinking." But it's like, remember our Sadio Mane got milked over? Did he milk the goalkeeper? Yeah. It was one of those collisions, but he could have got to the ball first. He could have deviated the other way, headed it, but he's taken a big, big whack off a goalkeeper. And I don't think they fancy it.
All right. I hope you can hear us loud and clear now. Arthur, like, we cover all sports here on the show, you know? Not just football.
The comments are all over the shop on Verts. Just for FYI to acknowledge that. Some people say he's been unreal for 2 months. Dermot Keenan's WhatsApp groups were alight last night with exactly what the moment Keith was talking about. So he splits opinion.
Unreal. He ran the game last night. Keith talking out of his hole.
Have a look at the 28 minutes. No, I'm saying he's a good player. I'm saying he's good on the ball. I'm saying he's a brilliant technician.
It's a brave take.
Have a look at the 38 minutes. Have a look. The comments, go and have a look on YouTube. Have a look at that 38 minute and that little 5 second clip of him half heartedly heading the ball.
Yeah.
Sums it up.
Yeah. Good morning.
What's you're crack?
Well. Yeah.
Yeah,
a few technical issues there to start with, was it? But we got our shape together.
Not on my end.
Yeah, well listen, you don't know. Yeah. Come here to me now. You weren't watching the football. Necessarily. You had your eyes on other things last night.
Wall to wall Winter Olympics last night. Wall to wall.
You know, that's why he was ice cold in the corner there. He was taking his time. He's ready to go.
Lovely segue.
That was your platform. Here you go. Tell the people.
No, there's not much to tell. But ice skating. No, speed skating. Which is class. That's just like around
the one around the circle.
Yeah.
As quick as you can.
Yeah. It's deadly. I didn't know the Dutch had such a stronghold over
it. Yeah, they're pretty good.
No, they didn't win. This guy from Wisconsin. Yeah.
Wow.
At the Olympic record.
Did he?
I don't have too much to say on this because I don't really have any depth. I've watched it for pretty much the first time consciously yesterday. But it was class. Like, these boys are going like 60 kilometres an hour.
I base your excitement levels on the punctuation of your WhatsApps.
Oh, that was... the drama. Sorry. It was great, right? It was great, but there was real drama. There was like... So you know the way these things go? It's like almost... It's seeded or placed in such a way that the most likely to win are probably closer to the end. So you're getting rid of all the chaff beforehand. You're fucking 109s, everything like that. Anyway, you're getting into the business end of it as it's coming down to the last.
Excuse me.
But like one of the, I'd say maybe, and they go in pairs. So maybe one of the 3, 4, 5 back pairs. So like in the mix for medal, but maybe not expected. He was flying around, this Dutch guy. I forget his name, begins with W. Flying around. And in the thing, the way they go, they start off kind of, they switch over and back at a certain point to get the inside track, to get the benefit of that. So they're always kind of switching over and back. But at one point anyway, this Dutch fellow was going across and the Chinese guy he was in there with didn't move in time. And they clashed, right? And he came through and he still finished in pretty good time, but he was raging. I mean, your man goes past him a little bit, he reaches out to push him. Mm. After the thing, he was bullying. And then he got, Chinese guy got disqualified.
Oy.
And your man, after it was all over, it all went through, the winner was a guy from America who was expected to win, broke Olympic record class. They brought your man back out. They were like, all right, look, it was unfair. You can do it again.
What?
Yeah, they let him do it again. But he had to do it on his own, which is harder because you have no chance of getting in a little kind of wind thing behind someone else for a few seconds.
Gotta do it again. What is
a
school sports day?
It's 1,000 metres. But sure, he was shagged. He couldn't do a thing. Like, he was wrecked. There was no way he was getting back up to the speed he was going before. And I just felt very sorry for him. He seemed like a bit of a bollocks. Like, I won't lie to you. Like, just his general reaction afterwards. It was such a performative. He was furious, but it was really outlandish, kind of exuberant anger. But he couldn't do it again. He just couldn't get up to speed again. Now, but he could have. He could have troubled the medals. But I thought afterwards, what was really exciting in the minute, and obviously I don't know where these guys are training or anything else, but the guy who crossed over with him and scuppered his chances was a Chinese speed skater. Mm-hmm. And in the very next race, another Chinese skater, speed skater, got in and got what eventually turned out to be the bronze medal. And I was like, oh, if I'm that guy, I'm going, this guy was just here to mess me up. I'd be looking into collusion, but that's just me. But anyway, amazing drama. Speed skating. It's not just for Christmas.
For life, right? Would you go speed skating?
You wouldn't. Like these boys, like, you want to see the build of these boys. It's all arse and legs, like. Mm. Outrageous power, like, they're going around this thing, like,
power, yeah.
60 kilometres an hour, like. And it's so funny because at one stage, whatever way there was a camera, it looked like the guy was on, like, a travelator. He was just kind of going back to his seat. It looked like he was on a travelator just going along, but sure, he's just on the ice, but they're having to exert no forward pressure. It's just the momentum that's carrying them on.
Yeah.
But I'd say if you came down on it, it's like concrete, like.
We're getting the Winter Olympics mentioned every day in the show so far, which is great. Like, it's good for the Winter Olympics. Just the storylines too, you know. There's the guy who won the Normal Hill, which is a very underplayed name for the danger of what you're doing. This is when you go down like at a million miles an hour and up into the air and fly.
Yeah, if you land, that's poorly, the you could die. Penis injections.
Penis injection event. Yeah. And the guy who won it suffered from vertigo. What are the odds? And then you obviously heard the Norwegian guy who won the bronze medal and then admitted to cheating on his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Saw that?
Yeah, strange.
And there's storylines going with it too. Like, it's not just the sport. It's a bit of everything in the Winter Olympics.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It was great. The ice dancing was on last night then as well. I wasn't sold on that originally.
The figure skating?
Kind of, but it's the one, like, there's figure skating where they're going kind of balls to the wall, throwing each other up in the air and that type of one, which is like, this is mad, like, where they're doing the big axles and everything else. This one's a little bit more, how would you describe it? Focused on the beauty aspect of it rather than, let's say, that they're all routines and stuff. Ah, to be fair, like, there was a British pair as well. It's male, female. There was a British pair and he was from Scotland. I don't know where she was from, but she was representing the UK. But her accent was like North American. But they did some like Scottish themed thing wearing kind of that kilt colour stuff. And they came out to like Pretenders 500 miles or I Would Walk, whatever. And that was part of the routine. And it was just, I wasn't having it. I don't think it didn't work. But then, oh God. They were like same thing, best ones going towards the last, and they were fourth, last out, so right in the mix for medals. She mucked up, made a mistake, they dropped down to like seventh. Interviewed after, she was distraught. I mean, it was one of those things where it's like, oh, I don't know if you're ever bouncing back from that. Yeah,
it's great fun for us, it's so serious for them.
Oh, like it was do or die. Like,
what's the scariest Winter Olympic sport? You know, you're talking about the jumping.
I'd say Normal Hill is mental to do for the first time.
The luge.
The luge is terrifying.
The luge, like, you're 6 inches off the ground as you're baiting around the place.
According to Cool Runnings, bobsledding can be very dangerous if you get it wrong.
Yeah.
It feels safer because you're in a couple of bodies.
Well, you're
in
condensed, but that could be claustrophobic, you know. You could break a neck here and there.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
The skeleton.
The skeleton, yeah.
I just think Normal Hill is like, once you leave that thing, best of luck to you. Hope you land safely. No guarantee. Plenty of comments coming in. Bohemian 29 asks, what minute are you talking about?
The 38th minute again. And who said Florian Wirtz has been unbelievable for the last 2 months? Four goals.
I'm not sure who that
130
is.
Million. Four goals. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I think it's a very Liverpool.
If Wirtz has been unbelievable, Victor Gyökeres must be absolutely on fire. What's
not
he got
not to mention Bruno. Huh?
Ah, Bruno. Nah? Jesus. Tonight, here we go. Now, look, he's a brilliant player. I'm not taking that away from him, but I need more physicality. I think Liverpool fans would admit he needs more physicality and just needs to be a little bit braver. I think if he gets that and he pushes his numbers up, he could definitely be a success at Liverpool, but he needs that little bit more doggedness about him.
Let me ask you now, do you think Nottingham Forest will get relegated?
No.
Based on his decision this morning. If you just tune in, Sean Dyche has been relieved of his duties as Nottingham Forest boss. So he joins Nuno Espirito Santo and Ange Postecoglou on the scrap heap of Forest for the 25-26 season. They're 17th. They're 3 points above the relegation zone. Their form, unlike, say, Thomas Frank and Spurs, it's not that dire on paper. So they had a drab 0-0 last night with the worst team in the league, Wolves. Then the previous time out, they lost to Leeds last Friday night, drew with Palace. But then if you go back to the 25th of January only, they went to high-flying Brentford and they won 2-0.
Yeah, it's been a little bit up and down. I still maintain that they'll be okay. It's strange because every club now that doesn't have a manager, it's like, well, we need to appoint an interim because there's going to be so many managers that are available after the World Cup. I wonder if the owner of Nottingham Forest is thinking exactly the same, which puts them in a boat of, well, now we need an interim. You want an interim going into a relegation battle? I think that's dangerous, dangerous territory, and you need somebody who... You don't need a tactically astute manager when you're in a relegation dogfight. You need somebody to motivate the lads. And on paper, Nottingham Forest players are too good to be where they are. So they should be able to ease away. But with the European competition in the background, it's going to be difficult. And yeah, I'm not sure what the expectations are at first. I'm really not. I think they want to be in European races every season, which, you know, the Premier League is getting better and stronger every single year. It feels like it's becoming more and more difficult for teams like Forest to upset the odds. But yeah, it's going to have to be a good appointment. But who goes in there and hits the ground running? So I think they will flirt with it. But I ultimately don't think West Ham or Leeds or even a Crystal Palace will stay north of Nottingham Forest.
So you look at the relegation zone now. So Wolves are doomed on 9 points, bottom. Burnley had a great win last night. They're fourth of the season. So they're 19th with 18 points. And then West Ham improved under Nuno. A draw with United there the other night. 24 points. As I said, they're 3 points behind Forest. And Forest have a better goal difference, plus four. And then above them is Spurs, 2 points ahead. So they could stay up by default.
Yeah, what you mean? Just because nobody's good enough to catch them?
Well, yeah, like, are Forest better than West Ham?
I think so.
It'd be some going if Nuno went back to relegate Forest, you know?
Yeah, it would be. And to be fair, like, wouldn't it be ironic for the owner of Nottingham Forest to get rid of him, and then the manager who goes and pips them and get his club relegated is Nuno Espirito Santos at West Ham? And West Ham look to be moving forward. They were very unlucky against Manchester United. Jarrod Bowen just keeps doing what he's doing. And I always look at Bowen and think, does he want more for himself? Like, West Ham are a big club within their own right, but it seems like year after year they're constantly flirting with relegation. This is a lad who will want to play in the World Cup for England, not just make the squad. And if West Ham are flirting with a relegation, you imagine Thomas Tuchel in the back of his head is thinking, you're the easiest option to leave out here. If he goes to a bigger club, which he's more than capable of, I think he demands a little bit more respect. But it's an awkward conversation to have with Danny Dyer when you go home, isn't it?
Sure is.
It is interesting. I wonder about that. Like, I'd say it's nice being a big fish in a smaller pond as well, though. And they have the trophy, I suppose. I know it's not the be-all and end-all, but it's been good days as well.
Yeah, but he must be looking at the likes of Eze, you know, going from Crystal Palace to Arsenal. I know Eze doesn't play every single minute for Arsenal, but just being at that big club sort of pumps up his chances of getting into the World Cup squad. Jarrod Bowen done a bigger move, you think. He demands more respect. He probably bumps up that queue a little bit as well. And the fact that he can play on the left, he can play on the right, he can play through the middle, he can even play in the 10. He's very, very versatile. So I would have him in the English squad, but I'm not sure Thomas Tuchel is thinking the same with the amount of talent that they have. And I think it's because he's at West Ham. If he was at, you know, a bigger club, a top six club, then I think Jarrod Bowen is in that English team and probably pushing to get on the pitch.
Yeah. On the Dyche stuff there, like, we came into the office this morning and saw it, yellow barrage on Sky Sports News. I was thinking Oliver Glasner was next, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, he was going to go at the end of the season anyway, but I was like, geez, they might just get rid of him now. So if anyone was going to be there, I thought it was him. I didn't see Dyche being that name. You have to bear in mind the owner about how temperamental he is. But, like, is there, outside of the owner's trigger-happy tendencies, are you surprised by this decision?
I'm surprised, given where they are, that they're smacking a relegation battle. And like I say, are they going to get somebody on board now for the next 2 months of the season, and then we'll have an interim? I think it's all a little bit disjointed. And to be fair, if Sean Dyche wasn't the manager of Nottingham Forest that just got sacked, you're probably scraping around thinking, who should Nottingham Forest go for? Tell you what, Sean Dyche is right up their street. It's crazy. And you can't bring a tactical manager now, in like a modern day tactical young manager, into this Nottingham Forest team, because if it takes a couple of weeks, a month, 8 weeks to get his point across, could be too late. So it's somebody with a simplistic game plan that will get high energy levels. I mean, look at Michael Carrick at Manchester United. There's no tactical input there that you're thinking, tell you what, I didn't see that. It's just energy levels, our lads, running, playing in proper positions. I think if Nottingham Forest get a manager that does that, they'll be absolutely fine. But when the manager keeps changing hands like that and keeps shuffling the deck, you almost want them to go down.
Yeah. There's a really rough run of fixtures for them.
Well, I forgot.
Stick or twist in
that situation, you know?
But I forgot as well. I didn't realise it's coming up so soon. Like, they're in Turkey next week. Fenerbahce.
Yeah.
But, like, you look at it, like, they're Liverpool in between that, Brighton, City. Fulham, maybe you think you should probably win that the way it's going. But then Spurs away, that's a dogfight. Villa. Jesus. And then the last, Chelsea, Newcastle, United and Bournemouth to finish out the season. Like,
and do you know what else is so flimsy? Like, Forest were much, much the better team last night. I should admit, I only seen the highlights, but the next year, I think of 2.5. So they were much, much the better team. If Forest scramble one of those shots over the line and they win 1-0,
yeah,
does he hang fire? Is it really that much of a knife edge that, oh, you didn't score, so you're sacked, but if you had scored, you'd have stayed on? It seems like razor blade stuff to me. And you can't be totally convinced to sack the manager if one of those had gone in, we'd have kept you.
But their form's not even been that. I know you've said it, but like, their form's not that bad.
Not bad.
I'm like, I'm looking at things. I wasn't keeping. I know they lost the 3-0 loss to Leeds or whatever.
Yeah, that
the
court.
I know that was like, I looked at that and I was like, oh, that's worrying. But like, bet West Ham 6th of January, drew with Arsenal, bet Brentford away.
Yes, I mentioned 25th of January.
Drew with Palace.
Like, yeah. Because even when they lost to Leeds on last Friday night, I was thinking, like, the perception of Dyche Forest is that, like, he's doing all right. You know? It's like, that's a bad result now at Elland Road. But otherwise, he's doing all right. I don't think he's in danger. So what next now? So their fourth manager of the year, this may be interim, might not be permanent. There's a shout there in the comments I see for Roy to go back. I mean, this owner is the character that might go for Roy Keane.
I think he's spoken about him before, hasn't he? He spoke about that when they left. Was he in charge when him and O'Neill were there? Did that predate him? I could be wrong on that, but I feel like he's mentioned him before around a bit of the stuff with the, remember when Neville was going mad with the Nuno stuff when he was down the pitch? He definitely had an opinion on your man, but I don't know. But anyway, I don't know if that was really a live opportunity anyway.
And what of Spurs, right? So Thomas Frank, was he, like, in hindsight, was he doomed from the start? Like, you know, their summer outlay wasn't great. Daniel Levy leaves on the 4th of September. He's obviously the man who hired him. Loads of injuries. Questionable choice for captaincy. Lack of creativity in terms of the players they bought. Poor business in January. Conor Gallagher was a decent signing, but they needed a bit more guile. And you know, that's the thing about Spurs. The very least you'd always say about Spurs is like they play a bit of ball. And they stopped doing that a bit with Frank. But like, you know, Frank was like, he was so hot right now as recently as the summer. You know, he only lasted 8 months. But with Brentford, when he got them up, they never once were in the relegation zone. You know that in all that time.
Yeah, well, it's strange because I was looking at the stats from Thomas Frank, and it's quite rare that a low possession manager will go to an elite club and do really well, and that's proven to be the case with Thomas Frank. The Spurs fans, to me, like, they keep saying to me, oh, we are patient, we are trying our best, we wanted them to do well. He hasn't been in charge for, I think it's 26 league games.
Yeah.
So the Champions League has been brilliant. They finished fourth in the Champions League, so that's not an issue. So we're boiling this down to 26 league games. And I know the home form predates Thomas Frank. That has rolled over from Ange. This isn't a sudden thing where all of a sudden Spurs have been rubbish. Spurs have been rubbish before Thomas Frank came into the building. Last season, they lost 22 league games and conceded 65 goals.
Jesus.
The year before that, they lost 12 league games and conceded 61 goals. 22-23 season, they lost 14 league games and conceded 63 goals. So this has been a gradual decline to where they are now. And the European football is probably something that takes your eye and you think, oh, but it's doing well there. And all of a sudden you look at the Premier League and think, well, that's nowhere near good enough. Was it Jed Spence and Mickey van de Ven walk past Thomas Frank and sort of seem to be ignoring them? Then Thomas Frank walks out with an Arsenal Cup and, you know, it just didn't seem like it was ever going to work. But Thomas Frank, Ange Postecoglou, Christian Stellini, Conte, Nuno, Mourinho, Pochettino, none of these lads could win a trophy. Or, you know, I know Pochettino went close, but it's all been a little bit all over the place for me. And when you, it's not just the 11 on the pitch. When you look at the signings they made over the last 5 years, and these are the flops, by the way. Mm-hmm. Brian Gill, Emerson Royale, Tanguy Ndombele, Clement Longley, Dragosin, Timo Werner, Matthias Tell, Kevin Danso. And by the way, I'm putting the likes of a Pedro Porro and a Bentancur into the done okay category. And if they're the lads that you're thinking have done okay, Romero would probably be a successful signing. Yeah, he's a loose cannon. He can't be described as anything other than a loose cannon. And if you've got players like that that are saying we need accountability and we need standards within the club, yet you're tackling like that away to Manchester United, it's absolutely crazy stuff. He keeps coming out and criticising the club. I think Spurs just need to get rid of him because it just keeps lingering and lingering with him. He always has bad stuff to say and he doesn't conduct himself like a captain. Not on the pitch, not off the pitch. He thinks he's good enough to go and play for Barcelona and Real Madrid. But he's a loose cannon. I don't think any. But you can't have a the good defensive structure when your captain is a loose cannon and makes tackles like that.
Yeah.
So it's not just the tip of the iceberg. It's the whole iceberg.
The thing about the captaincy at Spurs is like, who would you give it to if not Romero? They really lack leaders. Like, there's really no talismanic person. Like, if it's not Romero, it's Van de Ven. And we saw that in the ref cam footage that was released there last 21st from the Spurs Man United game at Old Trafford. The ref was talking to Van de Ven to explain the Romero decision. So he's next in line, right? But like, those two boys, let alone if they've been trying to hold it together at the back, they're also like, at times, the biggest goal threats for Spurs.
Yeah.
Like, between them, they got a point at Burnley, Van de Ven and Romero. Romero, like, won the World Cup at Argentina, started in the final. But at the same time, you have a fella who's like, at any moment, in any game, he could get sent off. He could literally see red.
But that's only a symbol.
So I suppose, look, to go back to the whole thing, and this includes Dyche and Forest, right? Do you know, because of the state that Forest and Spurs are in, will this actually have that much impact on the future careers of both Sean Dyche and Thomas Frank?
I think it will probably hurt Thomas Frank more than it will hurt Sean Dyche. I think Sean Dyche has been thrown into this role of, if you're in trouble, get Dyche in and he will sort you out. I know Forest a little bit different, probably a bigger club in that sense. But I think when you look at Thomas Frank, done really well at Brentford, then he goes to Spurs. I know he did really well in the Champions League, but it feels like it's been more often than not a negative outcome. So I think Thomas Frank has been hurt by it, but I still think people will look at him and think, we'll give him a job tactically really good. But I think it's more of a lower club mentality in terms of low possession, concentrate on set pieces, work hard. One thing that gets to me, and again, Thomas Frank wouldn't have said this to the Spurs players, they seem to come out of the blocks really, really slowly. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't start the game on fire and start turning the screw and put people under pressure. It's like they get their nose bloodied and then think, oh, we're in a match here, we better start playing. And I heard David Bentley talking about it as well, how slow they start games, they're reactive to everything. And yeah, even Javi Simmons is a player I really like, but again, there's no physicality in the middle of the park with him. He gets brushed off the ball too easily. Conor Gallagher, Palhinha, you're thinking they'll be little dogs in it.
That's the thing.
But they don't really have that type of dogginess about them.
On paper, like, Palhinha and Conor Gallagher would be a decent base. Yeah. If they had got that creative midfielder that they wanted Eberechi Eze, they wanted Morgan Gibbs-White.
I thought Man United could have done with going for Palhinha.
Yeah, there you go. Like, he's a decent player. Like, remember at Fulham, like, it was kind of Bayern kind of slowed him down a bit, but with Fulham he was a fine player. And with Gibbs-White, remember he signed that new contract at Forest and looked like he was the victim of a kidnapping. He was like, yeah, I'm delighted to be staying at Forest for life. They could have done with that. And that's the thing about Spurs. I tell you, the Bobby Dwyer's of the world now, that's what really upsets them the most. It was like, the only thing you would say about Postecoglou was, it was a bit of crack, like, you know, they tried a bit. But they're kind of a bit of nothing here with Frank, because they're appalling at home. Now, the home record precedes Thomas Frank, but it wasn't improved upon. They were all right away from home.
Yeah, but
they beat Man City at the start of the season, didn't they? Yeah, at the Etihad.
Early doors. Spurs are just a bogey team for City, aren't they?
I think that was Trafford's last act in the league.
That's right, Trafford started the City's goalkeeper this season.
Yeah, they brought in Donnarumma pretty shortly. Yeah, after.
But even in the Super Cup, like, they lost to PSG on penalties, but they were 2-0 up in that game. Like, they started all right. And then at the same time, like, how do you explain the game the other week? Spurs City, when they came back in the second half and drew 2-2. But how do you explain that? So it's a weird team, like. But I said to start the season, the squad's just not that great. I just didn't think it was. I look around and I don't get excited by that Spurs squad at all.
The squad is not great, but when you talk about the injured lads, I mean, Madison, Kulusevski really, really hurt, and Bentancur, Bergvall, Kudus, like, these lads are missing. Yet the one thing I think is something that you can give out about the Spurs manager Thomas Frank is that the tactical output still remains the same. They still fizz balls into midfield, and Papasar has some good attributes, but fizzing the ball into him with his back to the opposition goal, facing his own goal, is not where you want Papasar receiving the ball. And they kept the game plan really, really complicated, even though all the technicians seems to come out of the team. I think there's something there with Solanke. He needs to keep fit, and I think he could be a really good signing. But like I say, this is not all of a sudden Spurs have been really poor. There's been a gradual decline here that shouldn't have took anybody by surprise. And yeah, it's going to take a long time to turn it around, just like it did at Arsenal. I think that's one of the biggest things with this. All the Spurs fans look across at Arsenal and think, well, Arsenal are doing so well and that's why it hurts Spurs so much. They shouldn't be compared to each other. Arteta's at the helm at Arsenal 5 years now, whereas Spurs have changed a manager every couple of months.
Maurizio Pochettino, Roberto De Zerbi, the early favourites ahead of Xavi. Pochettino's going nowhere before the World Cup.
No.
So forget about that. But it'd be a decent return. I'd be generally against returning, but I feel differently about Pochettino and Spurs. Felt like that was a great match at that
there's
time.
There's no way it works, though. You know what I mean? There's no way you're getting back to the heights. Mm. Maybe that's stupid, no way. But it's just that you don't have... You're not having Harry Kane.
Well, it was just that squad he built, you know. Yeah. It wasn't even... Harry Kane was the forefront of it, but it wasn't even just Kane. It was like everywhere. There were one other forward short of being unbelievable, that Spurs. I remember they had Son and Kane and Dembele and Eriksen.
Mm. Yeah.
And their fullbacks were unreal. They had Toby Alderweireld and Jan Vertonghen.
Yeah.
Hugo Lloris when he was in his pamp.
He was good. Yeah.
You know,
that's,
there was one player there, like Lamella or someone else played as the other forward. And that was, you know, Dele Alli was quality.
Dele Alli.
So it was a great time and he wouldn't be coming into the same crack at all. But there's something about that partnership that I think would work. But anyway, that won't happen till the summer. In the meantime, Tim Sherwood and Harry Redknapp, they both want it.
What do
you think of
that
end-up?
Possibly. I'd probably go more down the line of a Sam Allardyce just to keep Spurs in the league. I'm only joking. Relax with the comments before they start all lashing me out.
Oh, they're coming in.
I know, look, I think Harry Redknapp comes into the fold because we're talking about an interim till the end of the season. I don't think Robbie Keane would be interested in an interim. I mean, I don't think Spurs will offer him the job full time, which I think Keane would need to uproot from where he's from. De Zerbi, possibly.
Do you like De Zerbi?
I like him, but again, he's a tactical manager. He's going to come in there and try and get them playing on the edge of their own box and playing out from the back, which could easily blow up in his own face. And then you're thinking, there's not a lot of room to play with.
Can I say something about De Zerbi?
Hmm?
I think he would have got the best out of you.
Roberto?
Yeah. I think that's the type of manager you'd react to.
Yeah. Eccentric. A little bit. Yeah.
To address Bobby Dwyer there, I presume when he's
referring,
he's given out. He says, "I don't have a clue about Spurs or what Spurs fans think. He's the only manager out there who can unite the players and fans right now." That might well be true. I'm just saying I don't think Pochettino will get you back to the same height you were at. I'm not saying it'd be a negative.
Spurs fans are in trouble. Like they keep thinking that if we get the right manager, everything will be okay.
Yeah,
it's more than the manager. I mean, when Conte left, he said, "Like Tottenham keep sacking manager after manager. Why don't we look at the players?" I think we need to start looking inwards at the players. There's a lot of underperforming players. I get that Thomas Frank's tactical output and injuries and all this, but that dressing room needs to have a right look at themselves. The recruitment, they need to have a right look at themselves. So a manager will knit everything together, but it will take a lot of time. And Pochettino coming in doesn't equal hit the ground running and back into the Champions League. It's a long, hard road back for Spurs.
Spurs are a Zara jumper costing £40, says Cahir O'Leary. Looks good in the hanger. Will get you through a night out. Might even get a shift. But the Ralph Lauren jumper costs you 2.5 times as much, will last you 10 years.
That's very Ian Holloway analysis, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fast fashion.
I like someone going towards the effort. I like someone thinking through a good analogy like that.
Bobby Dwyer.
Yeah. Sorry, no, there was also a thing, because there was a thing in the, I think it was the Telegraph. It sort of read like a bit of like nonsense. But there was a thing in Telegraph where there was one thing reporting that it was like, it's like, oh, Frank was obsessed with Arsenal. Oh, he kept mentioning Arsenal. Mm. The players were losing their head. They were like, stop talking about Arsenal. It read a little bit like, I don't know how true this is. But, and obviously the picture of him with the cup and the thing is like, all right, okay. So, So he had an Arsenal obsession and he kept mentioning it. A little bit like that stuff came out. I remember about Moyes afterwards, where it's like, oh, he kept telling Rio Ferdinand about what Phil Jagielka would do at corners. It's like, kept doing it? Like, really? But it's one of those things that says rather the symptom rather than the cause. But,
I think Arsenal are the blueprint for teams. Like in terms of how they defend, in terms of their set pieces, I know open play goals haven't been off the charts, but in terms of their solidity, in terms of how they go about it, it's not the most difficult game plan. It's, as I say, they lean into set pieces, they defend really well. Spurs should be looking to try and emulate something like that, but I understand when you're the Spurs manager and you keep bringing up Arsenal, it might rub the fans in particular up the wrong way. But top of the Champions League, top of the Premier League, in the final of the EFL Cup, still in the FA Cup, I can understand why he's obsessed with Arsenal. But I also understand that Spurs fans don't want to hear that.
Now, speaking of the Gunners, an Arsenal fan commenting on Spurs, do me a favour, says Bobby Dwyer, about you.
Yeah.
You can't talk about this.
You I'm can't talk. You're not allowed to talk about Spurs in Morky. That's it.
Come here, you have to go, do you?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Pleasure, buddy. Pleasure. All right. All right, welcome back. Keith Tracy. No. Said goodbye.
No. Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, fair play.
Keith Thursday. Keith Thursday. How are you, buddy?
How are we, lads?
Are you well? Welcome to the show. You nervous?
Yeah, breaking it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll start simple. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain scored for Celtic last night in his debut. Came on against Livingston in the 78th minute. Beautiful curler into the far corner. Who was most technically gifted, a young fella you played against? Because I was looking back, right? Preston, 2010-11. Oxlade-Chamberlain was with Southampton the same season. Southampton were in League One at the time. You were in the Championship. So I don't think your paths crossed. But I do remember watching that kid at that time being like, this guy's quality for that level. Do you remember anyone who stood out in the Championship as a ball-playing midfielder? Because it's a tough league to play ball, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. There's very little respect for anybody in the Championship. It's helter-skelter. Everybody fires into every tackle. Very rare would you get somebody standing off. To be fair, one centre midfielder I loved playing with was Dean Marnie at Burnley. He was just next level. He could see a pass, and he always had this... the correct way to pass, whether it was a ball in over the top or into me feet, it was always perfect for me. It was always there to be hit or there to be crossed first time, or if I needed it to be fizzed into me so I could take a first touch. It was like, he, you know, something that you hear professionals talk about all the time is pass appreciation. He always gave me the ball just as I wanted to receive it. If I wanted it on my right foot, my left foot, if I wanted to take it on my back, if I wanted to play a first time, it always came exactly as I wanted it. And yeah, Dean Marnie was a hell of a player. Started at Spurs, and
yeah, he started with those scum. Yeah,
as well.
Yeah,
really. You know the Office, the English version of The Office, just goes around quoting that all the time.
Really?
Yeah, and he looks so serious with his little shaved head, but absolutely hilarious. Him and Ross Wallace and Michael Duff in the Burnley changing room, absolutely hilarious.
I like that. Stephen Gerrard is a big fan of the UK Office.
Jamie Carragher.
Kieran Bradley, formerly of Off the Ball Parish, now of News Talk, will basically every other sentence will give you an office quote.
Yeah, I'm there as well with extras as well.
Oh, I didn't know you liked extras.
Oh, yeah, I had but a horse once. You know that one, don't you?
Yeah. Willy Wonka, Johnny Wanker, love them. Around the Bloom.
Can't say that.
It's a quote. HR again.
He was sick. It's going well.
That's true. I'm not a match fit. We should do an extra special. I don't know. You liked extras.
Do you know what SAS stands for? Super Army Soldiers.
Now, Dean Marnie, a fine player. The question on everyone's lips is: who's the best 11 you played with?
Ooh, best 11 I played with. I put this together last week.
like you didn't expect the question. Yeah. As you look down your 11.
Well, I still haven't got a centre midfielder in. I have 10 out of my 11.
So this is who you played with at club and country.
Club and country, yeah. So I've gone in goal for Brad Friedel.
What a man. Big into stocks. Is finance
he?
Guy.
I see him on Sky Sports every now and then. He doesn't look like he's aged today, but to be fair, it's something I want to get in. Me and my wife are getting into it now. I think yoga's the way forward. And Brad was doing yoga at Blackburn, like, I don't know what age he would have been, but he was getting up into the indoor at 7 in the morning, walking past the injured lads, and his longevity is unbelievable. So yoga, I think, is something I'm going to get into. Shay Given, very unlucky not to get in, but Brad, for me,
he was really highly rated, wasn't he?
Brad?
Yeah.
Unbelievable, yeah. Like, he went to Spurs after Blackburn. Yeah. He was at Liverpool. He was a brilliant, brilliant player and a great professional. So Brad Friedel in goal. I've gone for Kyle Walker, right back. Fair. Richard Dunn, John O'Shea, centre half, and Stephen Warnock, left back. But again, Kieran Trippier, like, I flirted with him, but if I was to play against either Kyle or Kieran, I would rather play against Kieran, because you feel like you could run Kieran, whereas you don't run Kyle in his prime, and you inside, outside, Kyle could do anything to you. I've gone David Bentley on the right wing.
Tell me about him.
You want to know about Bence?
Yeah.
The first thing that comes to mind with Bence is his parties. He used to throw these mental parties out when he's gaffing. He used to get marquees, big, huge marquees, and bands to play, and there'd be beer everywhere. But the brilliant thing was he invited everybody. The people that clean the boots, the people that go and collect the balls, the people that bring the drinks out, the chefs, the physios, the girls from the office, the receptionist, and everybody gets together and just has a really brilliant time. And I remember David Dunn singing Mustang Sally as well, getting up on the stage and singing. It brought everybody together, and we had that real feel of this is a proper team and a family place. And to be fair, it was all down to Benz.
What a player too.
Unbelievable player. Technically unreal. His right foot was unbelievable, and he knew it, but he was funny with it as well. Like when we had to do crossing sessions, he would be unbelievable, that right foot. And to be fair, his left foot wasn't bad. We very rarely use it, but he could feed a ball into an area with his left. So David Bentley on the right. I've gone two guy in the middle. I'm really struggling for my other centre midfielder.
Well, I'll hold you there. We'll come back to it.
Good.
We'll do a part two to give you a little time to think about it for the rest
of the
show.
Is this 4-4-2, by the way?
Of course it is. Yeah, 4-4-2. Okay, I was flirting with the Christmas pudding formation, but I've gone for 4-4-2.
4-4-2, right. So get your Key Thursdays in for the rest of the show, right, because we're going to get back to this in a part two. Key Thursday. Someone's asked here, does Keith Tracy like Key Thursday? And then someone says, until the 38th minute. Play for the cash machine.